Welcome to MMA on the Rocks. My name is Bill Welker. You are listening to episode 341 of the podcast. Unless you're joining live on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. If you do want to catch the show live, make sure to subscribe on one or all of those platforms. Turn on your notifications so you know when the show is live, like right now. Today is Sunday, December 10th, and we are coming off of a pretty awesome fight night card, UFC Vegas 83, which we're definitely going to get into. First, I want to wish a very happy birthday to Jeff the Animal Wilson, whose birthday is actually tomorrow, the 11th. those of you who have been listening for a reasonable amount of time, remember Jeff, of course, as the co-host of the show. And, you know, he had some life events come up that took him away from the show. But, of course, we still love and appreciate the animal. So if you want to send some birthday wishes his way, you can do so in the comments here or message me on social media. He's not on social media so much, but I'm sure he would appreciate knowing that the folks are thinking of him out there. We definitely wish him a very happy birthday. Probably going to be a pretty quick episode tonight. I have been getting into all kinds of holiday festivities this weekend. I was thinking about it. I can't believe how many things we do, because I was thinking about when I was a kid and it was Christmas time, we would go to like the local Thanksgiving Day parade in my town and then go see a mall Santa Claus and get a Polaroid. And then have to sit through hours of my mom shopping at the mall. And then one night in December, my dad would drive us to this city in New York called White Plains, where people would excessively decorate their houses, have tons of Christmas lights, reminiscent of Christmas Vacation, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. The houses would be decorated like that, and we would go and drive through and see that. But that was pretty much it, man. My daughter this year has already been to 3 holiday parades. We went to a Christmas cookie party yesterday. We went to hear Mrs. Claus read Christmas stories at a local business here in town this evening, where they let the kids decorate cookies and have hot chocolate. Next weekend, we're having pancakes with the Grinch on Sunday. Saturday, we are taking a Polar Express train ride, which is, I just found out, is like a 3-hour train ride that simulates like the actual Polar Express. And Friday night, we're doing the Christmas lights event at the Tampa Zoo. So it's been action-packed, not to mention all the stuff that goes on in the house, all the decorating and the elf on the shelf, which, has been a struggle to keep up with. So needless to say, my child is extraordinarily spoiled, and I'm really enjoying it. However, I have to say, I must be doing something right as a parent, because the three of us, my wife and my daughter and I, we rode our bikes down to Main Street this morning, went out for breakfast, and there was like a craft fair going on Main Street. So my wife wanted to go and do some shopping. So I volunteered to sit at the local brewery and watch our bicycles while my wife and daughter went shopping. So I gave my daughter a $5 bill. And I said, hey, you've been behaving really well lately. If there's anything you want from the craft fair, you can buy yourself something. Here's $5. So when they came back to meet up with me, I asked her what she bought with her $5. And she said that she bought a Christmas gift for her grandmother. which is a proud moment as a parent, because you give a 5-year-old some cash, you think they're gonna go blow it on something stupid, like, you know, some candy or a little toy or something. You know, she went and got a Christmas gift for her grandma. She got her little, like, snowman Christmas decoration thing. So, of course, I called my mom and told her that my daughter did this, and it brought her to tears instantly. Mark Fellow says, what a good-hearted father offering to wait at the pub. Yeah, man. Somebody had to watch the bicycles while the girls were shopping. I was sitting there for a while, too, and I was just I just kept hearing cash registers going off in my head the longer the girls were gone. Well, I sat there sipping my beer. I guess I'll give the brewery a shout-out. It's Troubled Waters Brewery, and I was having their Christmas beer that they make, which was pretty delicious. It was like a malted kind of bitter beer with nutmeg and cinnamon and that kind of stuff. It was nice. It was a nice little slow sipper that I had. I wound up bringing some home to keep on hand for the rest of the holidays. Speaking of holiday drinks, you may or may not have seen on social media, I posted my peppermint bark old-fashioned recipe today, which is possibly one of the best cocktail recipes that I have come up with. You know, it's like a fancy looking cocktail that you can use to impress your guests, but you can also just kind of mix it up without rimming the glass, and it's just as delicious. But I do rim the glass with some peppermint fudge, and then kind of coat that with some crushed candy canes, and then I make the old fashioned in that glass. It's definitely sweet. It's a bit of a sugar rush, but it's the holidays. So if you're a fan of peppermint bark, this is basically liquid peppermint bark that gets you drunk. And it's a bourbon cocktail. If you want to check that out, that is up on Instagram, Facebook, also YouTube. I posted it as a YouTube short, and TikTok. I am on TikTok. So if you want to go ahead and follow me on there, I do post some things on TikTok that are not available elsewhere. So there is some exclusive content on there if you're interested in that sort of thing. I post some... there's my alarm going off, reminding me to move the elf on the shelf, which I already did because my daughter fell asleep a little early today. So already took care of the elf. Don't worry, folks. I'm not going to let the show get in the way of my elf duties. So peppermint bark, old fashioned video, definitely go check that out. And I appreciate if you give that a share, give it a comment on there, wherever you happen to see it, YouTube, Instagram. The comments help, because I guess when Instagram receives comments on a video, it kind of like lets other people know that, you know, somebody's interested enough to leave a comment. So definitely helps me out if you leave comments on anything, on the videos, and sharing the content always helps. And I appreciate those of you who do that regularly. Anyway, so that's that. There's more whiskey content on the way, and I want to talk about what it's going to be, because the Whiskey Advocate list came out this past week, and I was pretty disappointed with it. So I'm going to get into that a little bit later, because I know a lot of you are here for a recap of the UFC fight night. So let's get into the fight stuff first, and then I'll get back to the whiskey business. So UFC Vegas 83, or UFC Fight Night 233, headlined by bantamweights Yadong Song and Chris Gutierrez. Pretty one-sided main event. Yadong Song, I wouldn't say he got frustrated on the feet. It seemed more like he got, I don't want to say bored either, but it seemed like I don't know. Like he just decided, okay, we're not going to stand anymore. Took Chris Gutierrez down and was just beating him up. That's the long and the short of this fight. It was Chris Gutierrez just getting beat up by Song Yadong, who, you know, we sometimes forget what a good wrestler he is because, you know, he spends so much time on the feet and knocking dudes out. He's got so much power, especially for a bantamweight. We forget what a good grappler he is. He really gave Chris Gutierrez the business, and this one comes away with the unanimous decision. And what do you guys think should be next for him? I mean, obviously we've got a bit of a log jam here. And now we've injected, injected Davison Figueiredo into the equation, who after his performance against Rob Font, after being previously unranked, is now at number 8. So he's just below Song Yadong, who is 7. I don't know if he's going to move up or not after this performance, but the only people in front of him, Marlon Vera, who's fighting for the title, Peter Yan, who a lot of people are calling for Peter Yan to fight Davison Figueiredo, which I think is an awesome fight. So I would definitely love to see that one. Corey Sandhagen, I don't know what he's doing. And we just heard today that Henry Cejudo is going to fight Merab Dvalishvili. And we don't know what's going on with Aljamain Sterling. So what if we do Song Yadong and Aljamain Sterling? If Aljamain is going to stay at bantamweight, I think that's an interesting fight to make. You know, we'll see what happens between Cejudo and Dvalishvili. We'll see what happens between Chito Vera and Sean O'Malley, the champ. And, you know, we'll kind of play it from there. We kind of have like an unspoken little divisional tournament here. Let's not forget that Dominic Cruz is still, staking claim to this division. There's a lot that could happen in bantamweight in the coming months for sure. Co-main event didn't go down exactly how I predicted, but Khalil Rountree just looked phenomenal in there, and Anthony Smith looked, how do I put this gently? He looked his age, you know. We're about the same age too, so he looked, you know, the way I feel some days. And you know, credit to him, he stepped in there against the killer on short notice. I thought the leg kicks would be more of a factor because Rountree has such devastating leg kicks, and Anthony Smith, of course, has been known to have trouble checking leg kicks. But really, it was the speed of Khalil Rountree that was the problem for Anthony Smith. And Khalil in the beginning was showing Anthony a lot of respect. He had him hurt. He had him wobbled a few times. And he didn't rush in. You know, he showed a lot of great composure. I've said for a long time that the Khalil Rountree with a chip on his shoulder is one of the top light heavyweight fighters in the world. The guy who goes in there and fights angry. I need to adjust that statement. The Khalil Rountree who is patient and calculated is possibly more dangerous than the Khalil Rountree with a chip on his shoulder, because here we have a Khalil Rountree who is confident, who, you know, he has his eyes set on clear goals. He wants to fight Alex Padilla. He said, you know, there's going to be some other guys along the way. Probably they're not going to give me Alex Padilla right now. But that's what I'm focused on. That's what I want. I want my face on a billboard in Las Vegas where I live. And man, let's talk about the knockout real quick. Just such a lightning fast combination. He was able to sneak those strikes in, sent Anthony Smith stumbling back across the cage. And then, you know, showed the restraint to not follow up with shots, you know, kind of held his fist over him like he was holding Thor's hammer, ready to put him away. And, you know, he didn't do it to him. He held back, and Mark Smith jumped in there, said Anthony Smith had enough. We had a couple of pretty brutal stoppages on this card. This was definitely one of them. It was a really bad knockout. Anthony Smith was, you know, incapacitated. So yeah, this definitely, it definitely propels the trajectory of Khalil Rountree. What's going to be next for him? You know, he was ranked number 10 going into this, took out number 8, Anthony Smith. So I guess he's going to be ranked at least that high. You know, he was calling for Alex Pereira. I'm not ready for that just yet. I think we're going to have Alexander Rakic and Yuri Prochazka. Do we do possibly, I don't want to say Johnny Walker, because I almost feel like Khalil Rountree is going to be a notch above him. Do we do Khalil Rountree and Nikita Krylov? Do we do Magomed Ankalaev? Or do we do Khalil Rountree and Jan Blachowicz? There's a ton of possibilities there. You know, light heavyweight is becoming an exciting division again, which is cool. All right, let's move on. And Mark Fellows has something to say about this fight. He says, I've got a comment from Matt Temple after he put the kiss of death on Jamie Mullarkey. So if you didn't hear last week on the Picks and Pours episode, which airs on Thursdays, I was initially only posting those episodes. So it's the second episode of the week. I was only posting them on YouTube. I did go ahead and post that on the audio platforms as well this week. So for anyone who doesn't know, Picks and Pours is the secondary episode of the week where I bring my buddy Matt the Mechanic on the show, and he makes bet picks. And he's actually betting his own money on the things that he picks. And I criticize him for the bets that he makes. And, you know, he included Jamie Mullarkey in his bets this week. And Mark Fellows is saying that Matt put the kiss of death on him because Jamie Mullarkey got, I believe, finished for the first time in the first round by Nasrat Haqparast, who just looked absolutely ferocious in there. I mean, Haqparast is a guy we've usually seen kind of grinding guys out, which is pretty much what Jamie Mullarkey does as well. So, you know, if you're going to bet on either of these guys, I imagine if you're doing a prop bet, you're betting that it goes the distance. You know, these are two tough guys to finish, but, you know, Haqparast getting it done, hugely impressive. You know, he had Mullarkey hurt, and, you know, Mullarkey's a tough dude. He kept kind of coming forward and taking more and more of a beating. And then eventually Keith Peterson had to get in there and shut it down. So impressive performance by Haqparast. You know, he said that, you know, his only losses are against top 15 guys. He wants to get back in there with the top 15. So who do you guys want to see him fight? Let's see, right outside the top 15, we have Drew Dober, Bobby Green, who I hope doesn't fight for a while, Renato Moicano, who I think is going to be fighting Drew Dober. There's Benoit Saint-Denis, there's RDA, there's Dan Hooker. I don't know. I'm not sure that Haqparast even as impressive as that performance was, I'm not sure he even gets a top 15 opponent next, because lightweight is just so stacked. You know, even though he was able to get an impressive victory over a really tough guy who has never been finished before, yeah, it may not even be enough. So, but we'll see. As for Jamie Mullarkey, he's a tough dude. He'll be back. Tim Elliott getting a first round finish over Sumaderji. You know, Tim Elliott took this one on really short notice. So at least one out of the two short notice fighters was successful last night. He got a first round arm triangle choke. You know, he got Sumaderji down fairly quickly in the first round, and he just had this locked up this arm triangle, and he's got that wrestler squeeze. It was so tight. It kind of looked like Sumaderji tapped, and then he just kind of went out, and Herb Dean had to break it up. So good for Tim Elliott, man. He's really been through the ringer in his personal life lately. And he was coming off the loss in his last fight. So it's got to feel good for him to get back in there fairly quickly and redeem himself with a first round submission win. Let's see. Andre Muniz getting it done against Junyoung Park, the Iron Turtle. Of course, Matt had picked the Iron Turtle to win. I kind of did too, but what I had said was, you know, the Iron Turtle's probably the better grappler, but the wrestling of Muniz is on another level. I mean, it was just Matt returned city in this fight. Because every time Junyoung Park got back to his feet or, you know, got a little bit of momentum, Muniz would just drag him back to the ground and hold him there. You know, this was a split decision. I'm not sure why. Junyoung Park did finish the first round strong. You know, he was able to get a reversal on Muniz and he finished on top, but I still didn't give him that round. And he kind of did the same thing in the third round, but to me, it definitely wasn't enough. I mean, he got pretty much ragdolled in this fight. I mean, if you count the mat returns, there was maybe like 18 of them in this 15-minute fight, which is, it would be a crazy stat, whatever it is. That's not the exact number by any means. I'm going to kind of blow through the rest of this. Kevin Jussé, unanimous decision over Kenan Song. Fairly uneventful fight, in my opinion. I mean, tough guys. It was pretty back and forth, but I just wasn't that into this one. Hyeon Sung Park with the TKO over Shannon Ross in the second round. This kid is really tough. And this was a really impressive knockout. This young Korean is undefeated, and that was his fourth win in the UFC, and he's had all finishes. This kid's going to be a problem at 125 pounds for sure. All right, let's talk about attacking the referee. Steve Garcia knocks out Melchizedek Costa with elbows. Nasty. He gets him down, and Costa, I think, won the first round of this fight. And Garcia comes back, is able to get on top in the first minute of the second round. Nearly got a rear naked choke and then lost it. And then just got to mount and landed some nasty elbows. Chris Tognoni had to step in there. And then Garcia, you know, dismounts and goes and celebrates and does whatever. I don't even see what he did. And Costa gets in on a single leg on Chris Tognoni, and you got to respect the takedown defense of Chris Tognoni here. This is a guy who I believe is a fairly credentialed wrestler, and it shows. You know, he had the far side leg control. He had like a nice sprawl going on. He had his hips in, and Costa was, you know, trying to get in on the leg of the referee, Chris Tognoni here. Luckily nobody was injured during this one. His coaches came in and kind of pried him off, but, it shows how out of it he was. He didn't even know, you know, when Garcia got off of him, he didn't even know who was in front of him. You know, he's grabbing on, like he's clearly grabbing a leg that's in khakis and not fight shorts. But credit to Chris Tognoni for handling that like a professional. I mean, he didn't even bat an eye. He just stuffed that takedown, waited for the coaches to come in and wrangle their fighter. So impressive win for Steve Garcia there. Luana Santos, unanimous decision over Stephanie Egger. That was a pretty entertaining fight. Tatsuro Taira, TKO over Carlos Hernandez in the second round. And Talita Alan Carr, split decision win over Rayanne Amanda Dos Santos. Great card overall. I mean, we had, you know, some devastating finishes. I mean, the Anthony Smith knockout and the Melchizel Costa knockout. You know, both of those guys suffered an extreme amount of damage. Let's see. Mark says that Tognoni won the third round on all three judges' scorecards. Well, at least they got something right. Yeah, so great card there. So real quick, we'll get into UFC 296, which I am so excited for this card. This card from top to bottom. I mean, if you look, the opening fight, the curtain jerker, if you will, Randy Brown and Muslim Salikov. Like, come on. That fight alone could be on the main card of a fight night. That's the first fight of the night. There's just so many great fights on here. If you look at we got Cody Garbrandt and Brian Kelleher on the prelims. We got Alonzo Menifield and Dustin Jacoby on the prelims. This is an insane card. So, of course, Leon Edwards and Colby Covington. This is a fight that's kind of been in the making for a long time. It's almost like the heat's died down on it. I feel like we need to reignite this thing at the press conference this week, which I'm sure is going to be crazy. There's going to be some viral clips coming out of the UFC 296 press conferences for sure. Because you're going to have Colby, you're going to have Ian Garry there, you know, who's fighting Vicente Luque, former teammate of his. And of course, Ian Garry's got all the drama going on with, you know, his wife and all that shit and, you know, her book and Sean Strickland and, you know, all that shit. So, you know, Colby Covington has got to be targeting Ian Garry in this. Like he's got to take some shots at him because it's been pretty civil between Ian Garry and Vicente Luque. They've made it kind of clear, like they've trained together. They don't really want to fight each other, so they're not really talking shit. So we're not getting the Ian Garry we usually get, where, you know, he's accusing his opponents of being child abusers and things like that. We're getting pretty civil Ian Garry, but he's got all the personal life stuff going on that, of course, is going to get brought up, not by his opponent, Vicente Luque, but by other people. Co-main event, title fight, Alexandre Pantoja against Brandon Royval. And supposedly Brandon Moreno is weighing in as the backup fighter here. So this will be an exciting one. I got to say, it's probably the fight I'm least excited for on the main card, though, because we have Shavkat Rakhmonov against Stephen Thompson. This is you know, the young, scary lion against the old guard here in Stephen Thompson. Like, does he still have enough to shut down this young killer in Rakhmonov, who, you know, is just a monster. The guy's good everywhere. He's got scary power. He's got great grappling. It's going to be a tough night for Stephen Thompson. Then we got Tony Ferguson and Paddy the Batty. That should be an interesting one. Paddy the Batty's been pretty quiet as of late as well. So, you know, hopefully he'll come back out of his shell in the press conferences, and I'm sure we'll get some wild stuff from Tony Ferguson as well. I already mentioned Vicente Luque and Ian Garry. And then we just had added to this card, Josh Emmett and Bryce Mitchell. This is a really fun fight. Bryce Mitchell, obviously outstanding grappler, not the best stand up. And Josh Emmett is a good wrestler. You know, obviously he's a team alpha male guy, so you know he can wrestle. Will Bryce Mitchell be able to get this to the ground? And how many of those big bombs can he take from Josh Emmett? So that's going to be the deciding factor in that fight. So we'll get into more depth with this one on Thursday when Matt makes the picks. I'll get into the card with him a little bit, and we'll talk about it then. All right, let's talk a little whiskey. I'm gonna have to pour myself some more whiskey before I do this. I'm drinking some Blue Note Juke Joint Tennessee whiskey, unfiltered, crafted in Memphis, 93 proof. This is pretty good stuff. I happened to come across this by accident this year, and I'm glad I did. It's one of my favorite bottles that I've discovered this year. Speaking of which, okay, I briefly mentioned this on Thursday. So, Whiskey Advocate is kind of the gold standard of ranking whiskeys. You know, everybody kind of waits for the Whiskey Advocate list to come out this time of year, every year. And usually whatever they say is the best whiskey, that whiskey then becomes, you know, kind of hard to find. Usually the list is very bourbon heavy. This year, there's a lot of scotch going on, which I'm fine with. I love scotch. You guys know this. I drink all of it, you know, from the real peaty, smoky stuff, the Islay scotches, to the really sweet, rich Highland scotches. I love them all. And here's my problem with this list. So usually this list comes out, and it's a great reference for people who are not in the know about whiskey. Because you can find out, like, what are the best whiskeys that came out this year? And you can look at the list and, you know, you can do your holiday shopping for people who, you know, enjoy whiskey. And you can just pick a bottle from anywhere on this list. And usually, you know, you can't go wrong. You know, last year the list was a little bit questionable because the number one whiskey was Jack Daniel's Bonded, which was, you know, a $30 bottle, and it was just a mid bottle. There was nothing special about it. You know, I picked it up because it was the number one whiskey, and I was like, they probably paid for this spot on the list. This year, here's my issue with the list. Every bottle in the top 10, except for the number one bottle, costs over $100, some of them well over $100. And I understand there's inflation and everything like that, but like, if you're doing your holiday shopping and you want to get somebody a nice bottle of whiskey, you don't need to spend this much money. And I don't know if it's like a chicken or the egg scenario where I don't know if these companies are putting out, you know, a higher priced bottle and then paying to get put on this list, or if the list is just trying to compensate for putting a cheap whiskey at number one last year and picking a bunch of expensive whiskeys. So let's take a look at the list together, shall we? The number one whiskey of the year, Glengassaw Sanded. It's about 100 proof scotch, $70. Okay. I'm okay with this. This one is fine. Number two, $100 bottle, Highland Park Cask Strength, batch number four specifically. So this is a high proof scotch, which is not a very common thing. It's probably delicious. I've had many Highland Park expressions. They make a really fine whiskey. That one's $100. Number three, Westland Garryana. This is 100 proof. This is 100 proof whiskey as well. Comes out of Washington State. $150. Number four, Little Book, Chapter 7. So this is like the Booker's line that comes out of Jim Beam. Insanely hard to find as it is. And if you do find it, it's MSRP at $150, which, you know, you're not going to find it for that price tag. It's going to be priced a lot higher than that if you do come across it, which you probably won't. Then the number five whiskey, Wild Turkey Voyage. They have the MSRP on this one at $275. You know, I'm sure it's a fine whiskey, but you know, you got to be really deep into collecting to drop this kind of money on a bourbon that you don't really know anything about. I mean, it's Wild Turkey. Obviously, they have a great reputation. They make some really nice whiskeys. But, you know, when they're putting this list together, I just don't know where their heads are at. I mean, supposedly they just blind taste everything that came out this year. And there's a panel that ranks them, but you know, if you're putting this list together and you have to be thinking, you know, people are possibly doing their holiday shopping based on this list, which a lot of people do, you know, sometimes, you know, whiskey drinkers, if people ask them like, hey, what do you want for Christmas? They'll just, you know, they'll just text people this list and say like, oh, I would love to try anything on this list. So, you know, if you could find it, you know, bring your phone into the liquor store with this pulled up, like, hey, what do you have of these? And people can just do their holiday shopping that way. It makes it a lot easier, but not when there's $275 bottles on here. Number six is a Maker's Mark cellar aged, whiskey. This is another high proof bourbon. I love Maker's Mark. I've heard great things about the cellar aged. But again, it's $150, which is really expensive for a bourbon. You know, there are fantastic bourbons that you can get for under $60. So why would you pay more than double that? And that brings me to more of the content that I made this weekend. I made a list of holiday gift whiskeys that you can buy for the bourbon drinker in your life. It's exclusively a bourbon list for now. You know, maybe I'll do another one for scotch or for American whiskey or, you know, some other categories. Let me know what you guys are looking for. But basically what I do is I give you a recommendation for different budgets. So I give you my recommendation for a bottle under $25, $25 to $35, $35 to $45, $45 to $55, and then over $55. And even my recommendation for the over $55 budget is a bottle that runs for about $60, maybe $65. So you don't have to spend this much money to make that bourbon drinker in your life happy. The number 7 bottle is the Dewar's 21-year-old Mizunara. Let's say Mizunara Oak. So 21-year-old scotch, but it's a pretty low proof. You know, it's about a 92 proof. And this is another $150 bottle on here. Number 8 is a $102 bottle. Number 9 is a Bardstown, which means it's a blend, $160. And number 10, $105 for a Glendronach Cask Strength, batch number 12. And even if you go, into the top 20, it looks like the cheapest bottle on the entire list until you get to number 20 is like $70. And then the number 20 bottle. So this is the one that I would be most likely to try this year. Ezra Brooks 99 Rye. MSRP $25. So I want to try this one. So I'm going to seek this bottle out. They gave it a ranking of a 92. So this is the number 20 whiskey on the list. $25. So I'm going to seek this bottle out. I'm going to find it and I'm going to do a review of this because I want to see what the bar is. You know, how good is this whiskey for $25? And, you know, are the other whiskeys on this list potentially 5 times better than this? You know, because I'm sure this is a great whiskey. It made the list. Ezra Brooks puts out some great products. And for the price tag, you can't go wrong. So if you're doing your holiday shopping based off of this list, I'd say without trying any of these whiskeys, I'd say go for the Ezra Brooks 99 proof rye. You know, the description sounds really great, and you know, for $25, you can't go wrong. Because here's the thing: you spend $25 on this, even if it sucks, like at least you only drop $25. If you get that $275 Wild Turkey in it, and that sucks, that stings, right? You don't want to drop that kind of money on a bottle and then it's like, oh man, I'm going to have to mix this with Coke. I'm going to have to drown this whiskey in Dr. Pepper just to get through this $275 bottle. I mean, I'm sure that's not going to be the case, but you know, if you're looking for a great sipper, I can give you recommendations for $60 and under. So I'm going to try and put more content out like that for you guys while you're doing your holiday shopping in the coming weeks, because, you know, I hate seeing people get ripped off, and I hate seeing people, you know, waste their money on unnecessary things. So that's that. In any case, there's still time to buy some MMA on the Rocks merchandise for your holiday shopping needs. You can do so through our friends at Team Reaper. Reaper1.co is the website. You can use the promo code MMARocks10. Save yourself 10% whether you are purchasing my merchandise or not. So you can still get yourself an over-the-top, under-the-influence t-shirt, tank top, or hoodie in time for Christmas. I think that's about everything, folks. So please make sure to check out the social media posts, the cocktail recipes. I got a few requests as well that I have banked, and I'll be making those, you know, this coming week, hopefully. So if you have any requests or you have any whiskeys you want me to review before the holidays, get those requests in now. We will be back on Thursday to make picks for UFC 296 with Matt the Mechanic. And yeah, I'm going to try and keep the content train rolling here. Please go to bkfc.com, and vote for my buddy Dave Mundell. He's up for Male Fighter of the Year. He's also up for Fight of the Year with his fight with Mike Richmond. So if you could, please go to BKFC.com. Make sure you vote for Dave. I would love to see him be named the Male Fighter of the Year, and he should be. He's had the most impressive performances, definitely in his weight class, and I would say in the entire organization. So please go on there and give him a vote for Fighter of the Year and for Fight of the Year with his for his fight with Mike Richmond. I guess I'll probably do some sort of award show. I'm going to try and fit that in amongst, you know, all the other content I'm trying to put out. So hopefully I can keep up with everything and be able to get that out to you guys. But let me know what else you want to see. I'm always open to feedback, criticism, and new ideas. I definitely have an open mind when it comes to this stuff. I'm not the type of person who's set in my ways. All right. That's all I got for this week. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sharing everything. And, you know, thanks for sticking around. So until next time, cheers, everybody. Goodbye.